From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, after New York's $153 billion budget passes the state legislature, good government groups weigh in. We'll take you to Buffalo, where Governor Cuomo touted the state budget and more investment in Western New York. And our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on why ethics reform did not make the state budget. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Good government groups weighed in this week on New York's late state budget. The $153 billion plan includes a variety of policies, which some say is par for the course and others say is too much in the wrong place. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
The state budget includes provisions to provide tuition-free public college for middle-class students whose families earn up to $125,000 a year, expand ride-sharing to upstate New York, provide budget flexibility to react to potential loss of federal aid, and raise the age of criminal responsibility to 18, to name a few. Karen Scharf is executive director of Citizen Action of New York.
I think instead of preparing to protect our communities from Trump's budget cuts by having a fair tax system, really raising the taxes on millionaires and billionaires that would allow New York State to do what it needs to do for all New Yorkers, the governor instead was focused on making sure that he could fast-track future state cuts when federal cuts come down. And that's really the opposite of what was needed and the opposite of what the legislature, I think, really wanted.
Dick Dady is executive director of Citizens Union. He expands on Governor Andrew Cuomo's power concerning future budget cuts.
The legislature has to come up with its own plan within 90 days of the governor's plan in order for that to trump the governor's plan. But in order for that to happen, the Senate and the Assembly have to agree, and that's going to be a very tall order. And that gives the governor a very strong hand in determining what those budget cuts are and determining them by himself.
Dady would rather see the following.
Ideally, we would like to see the Senate and the Assembly and the governor together decide what those cuts are, just like the governor and the legislature agree on what the state budget should be.
Citizen Action's Scharf praises two of the budget's components in particular.
Thanks to the grassroots organizing that happened all across the state and the strong push by the state assembly led by Speaker Hastie, New York really took a step into the future by raising the age of criminal prosecution and also by providing additional foundation aid for our public schools. And those are two really important advances in the budget. Hopefully that will mean in the future that we can begin to really address the significant additional needs of our public schools.
Meanwhile, Dady questions the need for deciding such issues as ride-sharing and raise the age in the budget.
Establishing a statewide hate crimes task force, which only cost $1 million, but that had to be decided as a matter of policy. These are important issues that the state should make a decision on, but I'm not sure why they all need to be grouped together and decided as the budget, other than it gives the governor and the other stakeholders who want these issues addressed greater leverage to have these decided during the state budget process. But that's not how our state government should function. I mean, there's too much trying to be accomplished during the state budget approval that everything is being loaded onto it like lights on a Christmas tree.
Republican Fishkill Assemblyman Kieran Lawler says there were items in the budget that did not belong.
If it's not about taxing and spending, if it's not budgetary in nature, it shouldn't be part of the budget. Whether it's something I approve of or not, for example, rideshare, I approve of it, I like it, but it shouldn't have been a part of the budget because it's not budgetary.
Again, Scharf.
I think from a, point of view of good government and citizens having a voice, it would be better if some of these policy issues were dealt with in a way where there was more time and more opportunity for the public to weigh in. But in reality, when you're trying to reach a budget agreement among two houses and the governor, the budget is the place where a lot of those policy discussions are always going to happen.
Cuomo says the 2018 state budget advances his Middle Class Recovery Act. It also holds spending growth to 2%. And the budget invests $2.5 billion in the Clean Water Infrastructure Act, and includes $70 million for statewide tourism.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Meanwhile, Governor Andrew Cuomo was in Buffalo for a victory lap of sorts this week following passage of the state budget. He touted the Buffalo Billion Investment Program, which is entering its next phase, and why his budget benefits middle-class families.
To deliver for Buffalo is not easy. Most of the legislature is from New York City. They're New York City-oriented. They're downstate-oriented. Buffalo got $1 billion a few years ago, which was all the money in the world, and made everybody else unhappy. Jealousy exists. I want you to know that. We found out when we did the Buffalo Billion. To now come back and get $500 million more for Buffalo was tremendously difficult. And Tim Kennedy and Crystal People Stokes led the charge. Let's give them a round of applause. We have Mayor Tarisi and Mayor Deister, who are doing great jobs. Pleasure to be with you. Let's give them a round of applause. And we have Mr. Howard Zemsky. Give Howard Zemsky a round of applause. Now, I want you to know, in truth, because I believe in full candor and frankness, Howard was in charge of the video today. Truth is also that Tariq, the Uber driver, did not want to let Howard out of the car. Howard was in the back seat, and he did put on the child safety lock. That is true. Turns out that Howard is a bit of a backseat driver and had to tell Tariq the better directions to get here. And when Tariq was driving too fast and too slow, so he locked Howard in the back seat of the Uber car. But it was the first Uber ride in upstate New York, and it was my honor. And Howard Zemsky is the father of the Buffalo Billion. He envisioned it. He worked on it in the community. He did it in the private sector. He's been doing it ever since. None of this would have happened without Howard Zemsky. Let's give him a round of applause. Now, we said this year's budget, which is really the operating plan for the entire state, was about helping the middle class. But in many ways, Buffalo knows that story better than any place in the state, because that's what we've been doing in Buffalo from day one of my administration, literally. That's what the Buffalo Billion was all about. How do you help the middle class? How do you create jobs? How do you bring hope back to communities in upstate New York that suffered for too long and were abandoned for too long by the government in Albany? And how do you say to communities, I know that you've gone through a tough time, but days are going to be different, and we're going to invest in upstate communities which have great workforces and great assets and great universities, and we can turn this around? That's about what the Buffalo Billion was all about. Believing in yourself, believing in Buffalo, believing in what made you Buffalo in the first place, believing in the workforce, believing in the assets. And it has come true. And to now follow up the Buffalo Billion with phase two means that this is going to be institutionalized in a way that no economic development program in the country has been institutionalized. This is going to be a decade of growth, a decade of partnership between the government and the private sector. We know that phase one of Buffalo Billion is working. You feel it. You walk down the street, you see it on people's face. You hear it in restaurants. You hear it in bars. You see it in the numbers. Home values going up 20%. Highest wage growth in 40 years. Young people coming back to Buffalo. Who would have believed it, that millennials, whatever they call them, but they're young people, they're coming back to Buffalo. And now this budget says Buffalo Billion 2, an additional $500 million to continue that growth, continue that momentum, and take it to a new level. And it was hard to get. $500 million is a lot of money. We're very aware of the finances, and we're keeping spending low in the state. And that's why it was a yeoman's effort to get that $500 million passed. We were in trouble early on. The signs were not good. You had a lot of people arguing against it, a lot of people saying that Buffalo has already gotten too much help from the state, a lot of people saying we want to go back to the old way, where the legislature distributes the money as pork. But your delegation stood up and said, no way. And again, the champions were Crystal and Tim Kennedy. Let's give them another round of applause.
Governor Andrew Cuomo speaking in Buffalo this week. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo was joined by Hillary Clinton for a ceremonial signing of the state's free public college tuition program. She said the nation's first plan approved by New York state lawmakers can be a model for other states and can eventually pave the way for nationwide reforms that were championed by Democrats during the 2016 presidential election. Her visits say more about Governor Cuomo's ambitions than anything.
Yeah, David, the guy wants to run for president, and this is a feather in his cap. As you know, David, I've been talking about free college for a long time, always saying, way before this became a glint in Cuomo's eye, but of course he's the governor, and what am I? Been saying, I went to Hunter College, it was free. There were people sitting on my right and my left who never would have had a chance at college if they did not get a free entry into the city university, which we did and which we have been extremely grateful for ever since. Nevertheless, it is now a time to think about what you didn't get in this package. The Republicans, who didn't love the plan but went along with it, attached what some people called a poison pill. For example, if you go to school in New York and they pay for you and you're under $125,000 and that's what's happening, you are expected to stay in New York after you graduate for 4 years or you got to give the money back. A lot of people think that's just silliness. You get a scholarship to the University of California. They don't say you have to stay in California if you took the scholarship. This is something that is not quite kosher for a lot of people. Now, another poison pill in this is that many New Yorkers go to school part-time, and this is not for part-timers. This is only for full-timers. And I don't know about you, David, but I remember, 15 credits, that was a lot of credits during a semester. So let's say it's 12 or 15, you got to do it, and you got to work hard. And when I was there, I had to maintain a B average in order to stay there. So all I can say is it is not the easiest of programs, and apparently a lot of what you really need, for example, room and board and the other stuff, that's not included in all of this. People have got to work. Most people who go to the state university, city university, at some point have a part-time job in order to be able to do it. This is not one of your fancy, independent or private colleges, and it is putting a tremendous load on the people who go there.
Of course, the free college plan, all part of the budget, which was approved this week, finally. The Senate coming in fact, on Palm Sunday to pass the bills to complete the process. The other major issues in the budget include raising the age for criminal responsibility in New York from 16 to 18, Uber and Lyft, driving services moving upstate, even some water infrastructure money. But I noticed, Alan, one thing out there that wasn't in the budget, of course. You've been talking about this for a long time, ethics reform.
Well, that's right. That was the first thing that the governor said to them. Look, I'll give you your pay raise, but you got to limit your outside activities, which is thought to be by many people sort of equivalent to bribery, but legal bribery. They said, hell no, we're not doing it. A lot of them said, well, we don't do that. Oh, yeah, well, then how come you didn't put pressure on your leaders to say, if you don't do it, then why not put the same kinds of limitations on what you can do with what congressmen do in Washington, D.C.? Huh? Well, the answer is they didn't want to do it, and so they gave him a lot of what he wanted otherwise. They gave away all the people's money in the budget, which, by the way, they call the big ugly. They gave all away the people's money, but they're not giving away any of theirs, and they're not changing their ethical behavior and standards. And frankly, a lot of us find it appalling.
We've had two Supreme Court justices, the Chief Judge John Roberts and Justice Sonia Sotomayor in the Capital Region recently talking about, well, essentially keeping politics out of the court, something you've been talking about, the court being a political institution in its own right for a long, long time now.
It is, David. It is. You're exactly right. You know, the Congress has Democrats and Republicans and the Supreme Court. Let's face it, you know, oh, they get up there and they testify and they say, oh, we just care about the law. But somehow they always come out on the side of the president who supported them. Now, in the old days, that wasn't true. You got judges who came on, Earl Warren and others, who really did surprise a lot of people and really did go according to their conscience and the law and their citizenship. But that is unlikely to happen now. And as a result, we've gotten to the point where they look at everybody's record, they predict based on the record and conversations what's going to happen, and they appoint them to the Supreme Court. And then just like the Congress and the Senate, House of Representatives and the Senate, you end up getting, Republicans and Democrats.
Very, very disturbing story out of New York, Alan. Sheila Abduce Salam, a New York appeals court judge, has been found dead in the Hudson River. An investigation is underway, but police say they have found no immediate evidence of criminality. Her husband reported her missing, and here we are.
Well, David, anytime something like this happens, it's a great tragedy, obviously. The politics of the situation comes second to the kind of grief that people feel when a great woman, apparently, from everything I'm reading, is found dead, floating in the river. Now, what you want to make sure of is that investigations, as much as possible, are transparent and that people are given information. There apparently has not yet been an autopsy. We don't know what happened. She could be the victim of murder. She could have fallen in. She could have, I hate to say it, she could have taken her own life. Nevertheless, we have no evidence of any of it. And so all you can do is stay put and wait to see what happens. But of course, it's a great tragedy for her family and for those who knew her.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. After years of efforts, ride-sharing advocates are celebrating in New York this week. The latest state budget deal paves the way for companies like Uber and Lyft to operate upstate. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Both companies are planning rollouts as they try to determine areas where need exists and whether service should be activated in one city or area before another. Albany area Democratic Assemblywoman Pat Fahey says ride-sharing offers a multitude of benefits.
It will help local economic development. It will allow people to go out to our restaurants and maybe have a drink with their dinner or two and not have to worry about driving responsibly if they are to use a ride-hailing services. I think it's also a safety measure for college students as well. So I think it's positive, and yet I think we also came to some positive agreements here to protect the not just the riders, but to protect the drivers.
Uber and Lyft currently operate in New York City under a 2001 arrangement through existing taxi laws that will not change. Several upstate law enforcement officials, notably Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple, support ride-sharing as a means of cutting down drunk driving crashes and fatalities. A City University of New York study entitled New York City Drunk Driving After Uber attributes a 25% to 35% decrease in alcohol-related crashes to the availability of ride-hailing services. Drivers must be at least 19 years old. Groups that opposed ride-sharing in New York called for drivers to be fingerprinted, but lawmakers opted to impose a rigorous screening process that includes criminal background checks. According to Fahey, the Department of Motor Vehicles will have broad oversight of the industry.
It will be regulated by the DMV, our Department of Motor Vehicles. Any driver will now have to have a certain minimum of insurance in their cars, even when they're just looking for a passenger.
The minimum required is set at $75,000 per person for death and bodily injury, $150,000 per occurrence for death and bodily injury, and $25,000 for property damage. During period two, when the driver has accepted a passenger, and period three, when a passenger is being transported and until that passenger is discharged, there's a $1.25 million liability insurance policy required, along with $1.25 million in supplementary uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage. Joe Bonilla with the Capital Ridesharing Coalition says the service will become available upstate in about 90 days and expects the impact to be immediate with summer events and activities.
Track season coming up and other festivals and other places that people want to go to enjoy the summer. This is something that we needed. We call ourselves Tech Valley, and certainly now the name can truly mean that. And, you know, this region is a wonderful place to live, work, and play. And ride-sharing connects that together.
Ride-sharing is not a sure thing everywhere. New York's four biggest cities, Yonkers, Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo, can choose whether to allow the services to operate within city limits. Bonilla believes wherever it is implemented, ride-sharing will transform public transportation.
Ride-sharing is not meant to replace taxi and livery service. It's meant to complement it. So the hope would be that taxi and livery operators in the capital region, but all throughout New York State, look at this as really that galvanizing point where they need to step, you know, their service up. And certainly there will be ways for them to collaborate with the apps. The work that CDTA has been doing in terms of building this regulatory structure that's going to help transform the taxi and livery service in this area into more of a regional approach. They shouldn't look at this as the end of their way of life. This might very well provide them an opportunity to improve their service. If you look at New York City, taxi cabs can be requested through Uber and Lyft via the app. So there's certainly some technological improvements that they can see as well.
Groups representing cab drivers disagree and continued criticizing lawmakers over the deal. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1715, or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.